President Trump speaks to world business leaders.
But if you don't make your product in America, which is your prerogative, then very simply, you will have to pay a tariff.
The U.S. continues its pressure on Russia to end the war in Ukraine.
The best leverage that the U.S. has is that it can continue to hold together its European allies.
And a new wildfire in the mountains north of Los Angeles.
So the fire spread over 40 square kilometers.
Today is Friday, January 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. President Donald Trump laid out his approach to foreign investment to the world's largest gathering of global business leaders, offering investors a take-it-or-leave-it deal to build in the U.S. or face tariffs.
VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports on the implications of Trump's return to the White House for the global economic machine.
President Donald Trump stood, virtually, before the prime movers of global industry and flourished his carrot-and-stick approach to foreign investors seeking a bite of the world's largest marketplace.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America, and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth. But if you don't make your product in America, which is your prerogative, then very simply, you will have to pay a tariff, differing amounts, but a tariff which will direct hundreds of billions of dollars and even trillions of dollars into our treasury to strengthen our economy and pay down debt.
Trump's message stood out from that of the other major powers at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which stress multilateralism at this annual international gathering on public-private cooperation, where top figures discuss global and regional challenges, including environmental and energy issues, geopolitical shocks, and how to improve living standards and stimulate growth. Trump called for a fair relationship with the world's second biggest economy, China. China's Vice Premier Ding Xuexiang presented Beijing's stance.
Economic globalization is a result of social progress and technological advances, and it cannot be stopped. Protectionism does not solve problems, and trade wars help no one. We should take every chance to guide economic globalization and move it toward a better stage that is more vibrant, inclusive, and sustainable.
Analysts explain the logic behind Trump's onstage commitment to guarantee supplies of liquefied natural gas to Europe, a move some of them worry could push prices higher for Americans. Bill Galston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Eliminating European dependence on Russian oil and natural gas is a really important foreign policy objective for the president. I know he was very critical in the past, especially of Germany, for authorizing the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and of allowing an actual increase in German and European dependence on Russian fossil fuels to develop.
Those who heard Trump in person shared their impressions with reporters afterward. This year's event drew 3,000 attendees from more than 130 countries. Espen Barth Eide is Norway's foreign minister.
Well, you know, I think that what we Europeans should take out of this is that we should strengthen our work to consolidate economic growth, you know.
Stuart Eisenstadt is a former U.S. diplomat who served as an advisor to former U.S. President Jimmy Carter.
It shows one reason why he won the election, which is he speaks forcefully. You may not agree with everything, but he speaks with a great deal of force.
And Agnes Callamard leads global rights watchdog Amnesty International.
It's a vision solely centered on an American vision. There is nothing about the rest of the world.
Discussions about some of the world's most pressing issues continue through Friday in this tiny town in the Swiss Alps. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
To the east of Switzerland, Russia's war in Ukraine rages on. Just days into his presidency, Donald Trump is intensifying pressure on Russia to begin negotiations with Ukraine to end the war.
If the Kremlin refuses, Trump has threatened to impose high levels of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States and various other participating countries. VOA correspondent Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
Newly sworn in U.S. President Donald Trump renewed his calls Thursday for both parties to end the war.
Our efforts to secure a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine are now hopefully underway. It's so important to get that done.
On Wednesday, Trump wrote on his Truth social media platform that while he does not want to hurt Russia, it must reach a peace deal or face, quote, high levels of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov dismissed the threats Thursday.
We do not see any particular new elements here. We remain ready for dialogue.
The United States under Trump has leverage, some analysts say. Stephen Pfeiffer is an international security and cooperation expert with the Brookings Institution. He spoke via Zoom.
He could continue to provide arms to Ukraine, that he could move to take advantage of the $300 billion in frozen Russian central bank assets.
Matthew Schmidt is an associate professor of national security and political science at the University of New Haven. He was interviewed via Skype.
The best leverage that the U.S. has is that it can continue to hold together its European allies and bring along China.
At the World Economic Forum in Davos, NATO's Secretary General Mark Rutte said the European Union must increase financial support for Ukraine now because a Russian victory would be even more costly to the alliance in the long run.
There will be trillions extra, because if Ukraine loses, then to restore the deterrence of the West, of NATO, again, it will be a much, much higher price than what we are contemplating at this moment in terms of spending up, of ramping up our spending and ramping up our industrial production.
Rutte also warned that a rushed but unfavorable peace deal for Ukraine would be geopolitically a, quote, big mistake. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
With the new U.S. administration pushing for a quick end to the war in Ukraine, many of the country's 3.5 million internally displaced people are returning to their homes.
Many of those homes have been destroyed, and for many people, that means rebuilding from nothing. Lesia Bakalets in Kyiv has their story.
Little Danilo is a frequent visitor to this children's center for internally displaced persons in Kyiv. He is a wartime baby born here in the Ukrainian capital. His parents and older siblings have a long story after their escape from Russian-occupied Mariupol. Anna, Danilo's mother, recalls the experience.
We left on January 12, 2023. It was very difficult to flee because my husband was a policeman and his name was in all Russian databases. They kept us in a gym for 2 weeks while my husband was interrogated.
Anna's relatives are still in Mariupol, so she asks that her last name not be published. She arrived in Kyiv after an exhausting trip through Russia to Latvia, then through Lithuania and Poland.
When we arrived, we couldn't adapt. In Mariupol, we lived for more than 3 months without electricity, water, under heavy bombing. At first, we couldn't even communicate normally with people.
The biggest challenge is to find a place to live, says Anna. Almost all their income goes to rent. Some, like Lydia Maznichenko from the Kyiv region, could return home after Ukrainian forces retook her area, but she found her house destroyed.
Everything was broken here. The yard was flooded with slate stones, the garage and the car were burned, the roof was badly damaged, and the windows were broken. The tear from the bomb was right in the yard.
The UN Refugee Agency, together with Ukrainian nonprofits, helped rebuild these and many other homes. Elizabeth Arnsdorf-Haslund is a senior communications officer with the UNHCR in Ukraine.
Since the beginning of the full-scale invasion, we have repaired more than 37,000 homes in Ukraine, allowing people to either remain in their home or return to their home.
But the needs are much bigger. More than 2 million homes have been damaged since 2022, says Haslund. Also, IDPs have to find new jobs. The UNHCR, as well as the Ukrainian government, provide financial assistance, but only to the most vulnerable groups. Violeta Artemchuk is the main coordinator at the NGO Donbas SOS.
In
2022, there was no criterion for IDP state assistance. From August 2023, some of the requirements appeared and became more and more strict. Now the number of recipients has decreased 3 times. But those who are evacuating now got payments for 6 months.
Other issues IDPs face are recovering lost documents, receiving psychological support, and adapting into new communities. Even with the war's end potentially near, fighting is still displacing people near the front lines and adding to the 8.2 million whom the UN says have been affected by Russia's invasion. To continue helping them, UN officials are appealing for $3.32 billion this year. Lesya Bakalets, VOA News, Kyiv.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world.
A federal judge has temporarily blocked Trump's executive order ending the constitutional guarantee of birthright citizenship. The case was brought by the states of Washington, Arizona, Illinois, and Oregon. The states argue that the 14th Amendment and Supreme Court case law have cemented birthright citizenship into American law. The principle of birthright citizenship means anyone born in a country is a citizen.
Germany's opposition leader has vowed to bar people from entering the country without proper papers and to step up deportations if he's elected as chancellor next month. A knife attack by a rejected asylum seeker has spilled over into an election campaign in which Friedrich Merz is the frontrunner. Merz made the comments on Thursday, a day after two people, including a two-year-old boy, were killed and three others wounded in the Bavarian city of Aschaffenburg. The suspect is a 28-year-old Afghan with a history of psychiatric problems and violence who said over a month ago that he would leave Germany voluntarily.
A French woman identified as H.W., who had stopped having sex with her husband and had been considered at fault in a divorce, has won a case at Europe's top human rights court. Back in 2019, a French court of appeal ruled that her refusal to have sex was a breach of a marital duty and granted the couple a divorce to her detriment. The European Court of Human Rights sided with her on Thursday and ruled that the French court was wrong, condemning France for a violation of the woman's right to respect for private and family life. The court said that consent to marriage could not imply consent to all future sexual relations.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish.
And I'm Alexis Strope. During his inauguration speech, Donald Trump lambasted Joe Biden's administration for what he described as an inadequate response to devastating hurricanes in North Carolina this past September. And on Wednesday, he threatened to withhold federal disaster aid for Los Angeles, which is being ravaged by wildfires, unless California leaders change the state's approach on its management of water.
In a Fox News interview, Trump repeated false claims that the state's fish conservation efforts in the northern part of the state are responsible for the fire hydrants running dry in urban areas. He says the blame for LA's struggles to tame some of the fires lies with Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom, a political foe who has called for partnership and mutual respect as the state fights the blazes.
On Friday, Trump is expected to visit both hurricane and fire-damaged areas of the U.S. From Los Angeles, Jenny Adulo has our story.
Richard and Bushra Mauser came back to see what just 2 weeks ago was their beautiful home of 25 years in the Los Angeles suburb of Altadena, California.
It's almost an impossible task to get in there and find anything. When you find something, it's just so melted. All the metal is melted together. I had some high-end audio equipment in there that I thought maybe somehow it could have survived something, or at least partially intact. But the more I dig in there, I realize it's just the whole thing is just one melted metal glob of junk.
The Mausers have been staying at a local hotel and are hoping insurance will help them rebuild.
We are now just living in uncertainty and a bubble. So we're just dealing with our loss and kind of, because we're still living in shock and denial. Every morning you wake up and you say, maybe that was a dream, you know, and I'm going to go back to my home. But then you come here and you see the reality.
Fire did not reach Jose Velasquez's Altadena home, so he and his family organized a donation drive for neighbors. He says that at least 400 people have come for help in the past 12 days, and that they feel like they are on their own.
We haven't really seen much government help anyway. It's all been the community stepping up to help each other. There has been no visit from the mayor, nothing, you know, so it's we feel like we're by ourselves in this. It's just the community.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass did visit some areas in Pacific Palisades, as seen in this Instagram post with her note, "We are going to do everything we can to rebuild and get Angelinos back home." President Donald Trump criticized local authorities' responses to the fire in his inaugural address this week, saying the Los Angeles fires were still burning, quote, without even a token of defense. The website for California Governor Gavin Newsom says the state leader has taken several measures to combat the fires, including ordering prepositioned fighting personnel throughout Southern California ahead of the fires, and deploying more than 16,000 firefighters and other personnel in response to the emergency. Meanwhile, a new blaze, the Hughes Fire, started in the mountains north of Los Angeles Wednesday, growing fast and forcing the evacuation of 31,000 people by evening. Following Trump's visit, Southern California may get some badly needed rain this weekend, which could dampen wildfires, but stoke worries about the runoff of potentially toxic ash. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
As we've just heard from Jenya, the response to the fires in LA and disasters generally has become a political issue. Politics aside, though, there are more than 100,000 people in America's second largest city under evacuation orders, and there's a new fire now north of the city. Jenya is back with the latest.
So yes, yesterday, it was first part of the day, we got a new big fire called Hughes Fire. It's north of Los Angeles in Los Angeles County. Now we're looking about 50,000 people received evacuation orders and warnings. I think 31,000 people were evacuated, but they have, so the fire spread over 40 square kilometers. By morning, there was 14% of containment. And also by the afternoon, majority of people were able to return home.
So the Hughes Fire is burning, as you mentioned, north of LA in a rather mountainous area. I don't think there's too many people living right nearby. It's a completely different story for the Palisades Fire and for the Eaton Fire. How are we doing on containing those?
Those are almost contained. The Eaton Fire, I believe the number was in the 80s, 90s percent, and Palisades Fire a little lower, but I mean, I understand they're almost dealt with.
There's another problem coming for Los Angeles this weekend. Rain is in the forecast. And when you're talking about fires, rain is going to be a good thing, right? It will help put the fires out, but it also can cause other massive problems for the city. Can you tell us what those massive problems are and what steps authorities are taking?
First of all those debris, they're out in the open. And there is a huge concern, especially in Pacific Palisades, that with the rains, with the water, all those toxic chemicals, they will go into the ocean or in the lands. So actually, Mayor of Los Angeles now is expediting debris removal to prepare for that event. Also, you know, California, Southern California is famous, unfortunately famous for mudslides. So in those houses that may have been damaged in the fires, partly damaged, they also, and it's a very hilly here, so they may be in big danger of mudslides, unfortunately.
Seems like they just can't catch a break.
I know. We call it a fire weather. They call it here a fire weather. You know, a combination of low humidity and high winds. So we're all live by, you know, red flag warnings, expecting higher winds to come. So yesterday when we got those new, the Hughes Fire, and there was a smaller one, Sepulveda Fire, we had a high winds, and that are they are expected to continue through the morning of Friday. So, and that brings with it very high probability of quick spreading of the fire. So that's why everyone is on a high alert right now.
Jenya Dulo covers Los Angeles for VOA. Jenya, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
In Afghanistan, women and girls are prohibited from going to school and holding most jobs. Women are prohibited from traveling without a male guardian. Taliban authorities have said Afghan women will no longer be allowed into amusement parks. Gyms and fitness centers for women have been banned across the country.
The prosecutor at the International Criminal Court says this adds up to crimes against humanity. Zachary Goldman of Reuters has our story.
The prosecutor for the International Criminal Court in The Hague said on Thursday he was seeking arrest warrants for two Taliban leaders in Afghanistan. Supreme spiritual leader Haibatullah Akhundzada, along with the country's chief justice, accusing them of crimes against humanity for widespread discrimination against women and girls. Here's prosecutor Karim Khan.
My office has concluded that these two Afghan nationals are criminally responsible for persecuting Afghan girls and women, as well as persons whom the Taliban perceived are not conforming with their ideological expectations of gender identity or expression, and persons whom the Taliban perceived as allies of girls and women.
There was no immediate comment by Taliban leaders on the prosecutor's statement. Khan said Taliban persecution of women has taken place from at least the 15th of August 2021 and is ongoing.
Brutal shots of the Taliban fighters.
Since Afghanistan's Islamist Taliban returned to power in 2021, it has clamped down on women's rights, including limits to schooling, work, and general independence in daily life. In August last year, the Taliban codified a long set of rules governing morality in line with Islamic Sharia law. The rules are enforced by the Morality Ministry, which says it has detained thousands of people for violations. The Afghanistan probe is one of the longest by ICC prosecutors and has been beset by legal and practical delays. The initial preliminary examination started in 2007, and it was only in 2022 that a full-scale investigation has moved forward. The request for arrest warrants moves next to a three-judge panel at the ICC, which has no set deadline. Such procedures take an average of 3 months.
That's Reuters' Zachary Goleman reporting. And in Afghanistan, women are required to cover their faces in public, while in New York, there is a call to prohibit people from covering up. Proponents of the measure allege that the COVID-era face masks make it easy for criminals to conceal their identities.
Supporters of the ban say it could reduce crime, particularly on the subways, while critics argue it risks civil liberties. VOA's Aaron Rainin has more.
A typical afternoon in New York City's subway system, where millions rely on trains daily to get around. While overall subway crime has decreased, incidents such as felony assaults and murders have risen since 2019, a New York Times report says. Suspects often use face masks to hide their identities while committing these crimes, adding to New Yorkers' safety concerns. Felipe Rodriguez is a former detective sergeant with the New York Police Department.
It gives people anonymity, and this anonymity actually increases their bravado to commit these crimes. They feel that, you know what, if I have a mask, it's going to be harder for them to catch me.
Some local politicians are pushing for tougher actions. In August, New York City neighbor Nassau County banned people from wearing face masks in public. County Executive Bruce Blakeman, who led the effort, signed the law.
Well, there are numerous instances of where criminals were using masks to hide their identity. We had situations where they would go into stores and shoplift and commit other types of crimes. We have exceptions for a health need or a religious requirement, but other than that, there's no good reason to wear a mask out in public.
Constitutional law expert Ilya Shapiro of the Manhattan Institute agrees that mask bans can be a powerful tool in fighting crime.
Just as anti-masking laws were a tool against the KKK, they can be a tool against modern terrorists and criminals, whether it's Antifa, whether it's some of the right-wing militias that cover their faces, or whether it's just everyday criminals and looters.
But civil rights advocates warn that mask bans may overstep, undermining individual freedoms. Beth Haroulis is a senior staff attorney at the New York Civil Liberties Union.
Anytime, you know, the government dictates what a person can and cannot do in a public space and criminalizes the act of wearing a piece of apparel, there is a constitutional problem with that and raises a number of concerns about inappropriate government overreach into people's lives.
In the meantime, New Yorkers are divided on whether the mask ban should be extended to the city subway system. Some argue it's necessary to stop criminals, while others fear it goes too far.
I don't think there needs to be a ban on masks. I think people should get to choose what they want to do.
Unless you have a medical reason to wear a mask, you shouldn't be wearing it at all. There are people that are using them to commit crimes, to hide their identity, and it's actually causing havoc in the city.
As the debate rages on, New Yorkers face the challenge of balancing safety with personal freedoms in one of the busiest subway systems in the world. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strope.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.